Welcome to the Third Realm Integration Podcast, where our unconscious minds meet and the transformation begins. I am your host, Megan Kenny. Let's get started. Welcome, everybody. What's going on out there? Back for another episode. I'm with it, you guys. I'm with it. I'm fired up. There's actually so many things that I want to talk about today, but I think if I allow myself to indulge in the frustration, I guess is a good word, that I get when I work with particular systems of all kinds, I think if I indulge that, this will turn into a rant episode. And I don't really think I want to subject you guys to that. So I think I'm gonna make a hard right turn. Excuse me, Gaia, that is cat food. Excuse me. Gaia's in the cat food. So we're in real time here. So let me get this cat food away from her. I'll be right back. Gaia. Oh, what is so special about this cat food that the dogs just, they can smell it from a mile away. They just cannot help themselves. This is what I want to talk about today. I want to dedicate an entire episode to the heroine's journey. Now, I've talked about the heroine's journey in many different, probably in many other episodes, to a brief extent. But what I want to do is actually read an excerpt from my dissertation in which I outline the key components in the real essence of the heroine's journey. Because it does differ from the hero's journey. And it is a much... It's the lesser recognized myth as far as psychological development. To no surprise, right? Of course, the feminine story would not be the one that is the one that you hear about and read about everywhere and that is talked about the most, but it absolutely deserves its due. And I'm quite biased. I think it actually is a much more profound experience than the hero's journey. And I kind of wanted to read a little bit about the differences between the two in the real archetypal core of what makes the heroine's journey so major and so poignant and so memorable. And I think, let me just frame it like this. You know, anytime you're doing the inner work, anytime you're looking within to do the inner work, you're doing the work of the feminine. When you're doing the outer work, you're doing the work of the masculine. So the masculine is the outer, feminine is the inner. And think about how the system we live in aligns with more of the masculine than the feminine. So back to this idea of the systems, right? So I would love to be able to go on a rant right now about systems when it comes to like technological platforms that I'm working with right now that are just like causing steam to come out of my ears, because they just, it's like, who built these systems? Because it's definitely not somebody who's using them the way that I am, because there's no common sense being used here from my perspective. That goes right up from right down to from the bottom. So the everyday systems that we use to frame our lives and to get our work done and to be functional and to try to make better use of our time, automated systems, and now we have AI in a much bigger way and all this stuff. All the way up to the top, right up through how companies are built systemically, what the vibe of the system is, what the messages are that are being sent through the system, how the work is done, how employees are treated, what the core values are of that particular system. Moves right up through the business and the corporate world, all the way up to the top, to the good old government, you know, which is just a hot ass mess. Just a freaking mess. And anybody knows who anybody who's ever been involved in any governmental system, whether it's taxes or health insurance or whatever. I mean, let's face it, you're on the phone for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. Credit card companies, same thing. So you think about these big systems and how they interface with the user is atrocious. And then you get to the top of like the top message that is sent down from the top of the system. And, you know, a great example of this right now are the issues that RFK Jr. is facing with the DNC. And he just released the letter that he sent to them. I mean, that's it. That, and he talks about the systems in that. And so the systems that we are a part of in our daily lives in this country make up our entire experience as human beings. Anytime I've ever left a job or left a job, you can always trace it back to the fact that I was unhappy with the system. And I just could. It is such a core value of mine that a system is run logically and with common sense and in the most efficient way possible, that if I am participating in a system that isn't doing that, and there's an easy fix, and it is common sense that it should be done this way as opposed to this way, if those changes aren't made, I'm out. I'm like, no, absolutely not. You want to talk about a drain for me? Burnout city? It always comes down to the systems for me. So I have a systems mind. I was probably some kind of systems analyst in my previous life, my previous Scorpio life. So it just, man, it grinds my gears. And so when we think about the system that we live in the Western world, it is very much a hero's journey system. It is an outward goal action, forward movement, productivity driven system. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. But we are so out of balance that if we dare try to add in the feminine element 50-50, try to balance that seesaw. A great example is taking a mental health day. What do you think is going to happen when you tell your boss? Actually, I shouldn't say that. Some people actually have great experiences with this. Telling their boss, like, you know what? I think I need a mental health day today. But I mean, generally speaking, you know what the reaction is going to be to that. It's going to be an eye roll. It's going to be a, okay. This person needs a mental health day, really? Oh, what about the rest of us that are showing up here every day? You know what I mean? People aren't very kind to those of us who prioritize the inner work and looking within to find peace and stillness. That is not a value of the collective in the society that we live in based on the masculine system that runs our day-to-day. And it is beginning to change. And you will find it, anything that you come across in the spiritual world, large in part, is about the inward journey. That is the heroine's journey. That is the feminine. So I'm not saying that that's the way it always has to be, because if you're going to do the inner work, it's naturally going to translate to your outer life. And if you're doing the inner work and it doesn't translate to your outer life, you're probably doing something wrong. You can't stay dwelling on the inside to sit with whatever's coming up and then not do something with it, because then you're just a hamster on the wheel. And so what good is it? So you have to have both. In order for the outer world to be successful and for you to accomplish the mission that you are here to facilitate and execute and accomplish, you have to always be looking within. So it goes hand in hand. It is a balance of the masculine and the feminine. And the fact that even in myth, the fact that even in the archetypal literature or in the Jungian space, the heroine's journey is like barely ever talked about. Most people have never even heard of it. It's bewildering to me, because even when you get into the spiritual space, what's everybody talking about? The hero's journey. Just the hero's journey. They're two very different journeys. So what I wanted to do is just kind of read an excerpt from my dissertation on what I wrote about the heroine's journey, and then maybe spin it off into some different, you know, topics or areas of conversation here. But I wanted to dedicate a whole episode just on this. because it is the path that I have walked. Not willingly, though. Not willingly. And so there's a really interesting aspect here. So I'm going to be using a term. So let me just say, I think the popular term is trigger warning. Okay? I think that's what it's called. Let me give a little bit of a trigger warning here, because I am going to be using the term rape. And I want you to think about it from a psychological perspective, not necessarily a physical perspective. So a psychological rape, or a raping of the psyche, is the psyche being taken advantage of and used against its will, used for somebody else's power grab and material gain against its will. If you think about what the soul is doing on this earth, the soul that lives in your body, what it's actually doing, it is striving for wholeness. That's what the soul is here to do. And guess what? It's going to do that with or without your conscious consent. So the term rape, psychological rape, actually plays down right down to the basics of what your soul is doing. Because that soul is going to do what it's here to do. It's going to encounter, it's going to willingly step into the challenges that it needs to step into to evolve. And it's going to do it whether you like it or not. So you could consider that a psychological raping of the soul by the soul. A raping of the conscious mind or the psyche or the ego by the soul. So I'm not using it in a way that's necessarily, I don't want to say not necessarily a bad thing, but I'm reading it from, I'm viewing it from a symbolic perspective. So I want to make that very clear. This is symbolism. This is when you're reading the world from an archetypal lens. This is the type of stuff that we're talking about. So I just want to read a little piece here. Maybe more than a little. All right. The heroine's journey, much like the hero's journey, is a mythical story that captures the essence of psychological development and offers an alternative understanding of the path to wholeness than that of the heroes. While the hero strives for mastery, the heroine yearns to return home to a place of normalcy and equality after being thrust into a mad world. The heroine's journey is initiated through a taking or raping, much like in the myth of Persephone. In this story, the heroine must search within for a place of safety and security after she is deceived and her innocence is manipulated and stolen. She must use her intuition as her biggest ally to engage the experience of powerlessness with focus and conscious intention to effectively navigate the uncharted darkness of her inner and outer world, archetypally symbolized by the variety of dark goddesses she encounters along the way, and transcend her limitations with a search for self-understanding. If she is successful, she will find her way back to her home within, that she finds by entering the inner landscape of her heart's dwelling. Here, her path encompasses both ends of the dualistic spectrum until it reaches non-duality. The heroine finds balance in the union of her inner masculine and feminine. Her actualization is reached through a conscious surrender into the pain and suffering placed before her as she discovers her essence and divine meaning while navigating the threads of the modern-day patriarchy. In response to whether the heroine has a journey of her own, and this is Joseph Campbell, Campbell replied, "Women don't need to make the journey. In the whole mythological tradition, the woman is there. All she must do is realize that she's the place that people are trying to get to." Campbell is at least partially correct when he acknowledges how others are drawn to the heroine who represents a life desired. The heroine navigates her way towards her inner truth, which is what everyone is unconsciously seeking. So it makes sense that she would attract fellow travelers along the way. However, Campbell fails to recognize the development of the feminine psyche and the origins of the feminine wound of worthiness and independent value in his lack of discrepancy between the two passages. The areas in which the paths differ are notably different. While the hero's journey is mostly focused on the triumphed outcome of autonomy, The heroine's journey focuses more on the process of the experience itself. The hero ventures into his pilgrimage alone as he learns how to rely on himself and his own instincts for competency and survival. Allies appear along the way who want to help him. The heroine, however, is supported by the power of the group as she asks for help and embraces the ways her fellow travelers assist her. The journeys for both the hero and heroine also share commonalities. They both incorporate the process of forgetting, becoming, and returning. The journeys begin with an invitation for an adventure into an unknown reality that prompts an evolving death-rebirth process of transformation. In the end, both characters return home to the inner self as a more mature and evolved being, sharing the knowledge they have acquired along the way. The heroine starts out her ordinary life adhering to the rules that have been assigned to her by the father, authority, masculine, or patriarchal system. She fulfills the expectations of others and starts to cultivate a life where others depend on her. She gets seduced by the illusion of control and forgets that life can change in an instant. Once the journey is initiated, however, the heroine begins to break her codependency patterns, question her life's meaning, and embarks on the soul's quest for fulfillment. The heroine's journey necessitates the opportunity for inner transformation. In the Western myth, the heroine must shed the former roles assigned to her in a patriarchal system as the father's daughter, and live the life she desires without the overbearing influence of parents and others. Once she embarks on the death of her former self, reclaims her body, and heals her wounded heart, she can transfer her feminine energy of love and compassion to herself, her allies, and her community. Self-compassion supports the heroine through her descent into the darkest passages of her inward expedition. Her intentional and conscious descent grants her the opportunity to take on the illness of her wounds and integrate their teachings into her body. She becomes alive with still wisdom absent of the patriarchal scars of conditioned passivity. Her feminine consciousness expands, which initiates her creativity, renewal, resiliency, and quiet, confident power. She becomes emboldened with her no, and in turn, injects more meaning into her yes. She no longer allows herself to be penetrated by the ruling patriarchy. She has found herself for the first time. As Marion Woodman said, it takes a strong ego to hold the darkness, wait, hold the tension, waiting for we know not what. But if we can hold long enough, a tiny light is conceived in the dark unconscious. And if we can wait and hold in its own time, it will be born in its full radiance. The ego then has to be loving enough to receive the gift and nourish it with the best food that new life may eventually transform the whole personality. So I'll stop there. I mean, I keep going, and then I keep going into the different stages of the heroine's journey, and those are some major components. So just like the hero, there's the call. It might start out as a whisper, as some may say, but a call from life to wake up and to take a step forward on the adventure. And Campbell said birth is actually the first call that we received, because we can not take that call, and the spirit and the soul can choose to not be born. But for those of us who have answered the call and said yes, we proceed with the first step along the adventure right at the start, right at birth. And so it's a call that sometimes shows up as a push from the universe, pushing you to answer the call, listen to the voice of the soul. And then you start along the adventure when you say yes to the inner knowing that is speaking through you and to you. As you go along this adventure, you then start to encounter the obstacles and the challenges that are meant to test you and strengthen you. And it begins with the initiation threshold. So you meet the threshold of the initiation that the universe is setting up for you. You get initiated into the higher version of yourself, going through the pain and the strife. At this point, the heroine must surrender. That's why surrender is such a key component of the heroine's journey that makes it so different than the hero's journey. It is the surrender in the willingness to meet the guardian of the threshold to take you to the underworld, to go deep into your own inner darkness, to find the glimmers of light, and then to ascend back to the top. So it's a major, major part. And the myth of Inanna basically details the descent part of the heroine's journey. And so the ego must sacrifice parts of itself. Parts of the ego must die and surrender in service to the soul in order for that ascension to then take place. And through that process of the sacrifice and the descent, you get the wisdom, you get the glimmers of information, wisdom, and knowledge that is needed for this self-discovery journey. You are discovering yourself in a great, great, profound way. And so it is through this process that the heroine transforms. And then she makes her way along the trek. She meets her allies. She cares about their well-being. She starts to see her true potential and her full power, not from her wounded, angry, traumatized side. I don't mean feminine power like that. That's like going to slay the demons. No, I mean the still power, the integrated power, the real power. And I think a lot of times we see the goddesses, the goddess archetypes in some different traditions. Kali is one, but like the slayer, you know, the feminine dark, the dark feminine. Who's going to slay the masculine and slay the dragons. And that is part of it. But that's kind of like the beginning. Once you find the real true feminine power, it's very quiet. It's very quiet. It's very sure of itself. It doesn't need to yell and scream and fight and slay. It knows exactly what the path is and how to get there. And it doesn't need anybody else to know about that. It is totally embodied and it is entirely integrated. And so as a result, it's very still and it's very centered and it's very neutral. And so as the heroine cultivates that type of power, she starts to really identify what her worth is. So that feminine wound of unworthiness starts to heal. And she really starts to see her full potential. And she's no longer held in bondage by the rules, norms, and expectations of a masculine-driven society. That codependency shit starts to go out the window. And it's not that I don't care what other people think or feel. I actually care so much that I became a codependent. You know what I mean? That's the story for many women. Or I don't want to make it gender specific because the feminine and the masculine live in everybody. So anybody that really has a deep understanding of their inner feminine is going to align with this. So it could be any gender. But just think about how many people you know fall into codependency patterns and what that actually looks like. It is, I'm not going to put myself first because if I do, I'm going to hurt their feelings. And I couldn't bear the thought of hurting somebody else. So I'm going to soften the blow for them. Sacrifice myself, and not in a good way. I'm going to sacrifice my soul, not my ego. I'm actually only listening to the ego when I'm a codependent. Codependency is the twin to narcissism. And so I'm going to just listen to the ego. The ego tells me all the shoulds. I should do this. Oh, I shouldn't do that. Oh, that's going to upset that person. Oh, they're not going to like me if I do that. All of that stuff goes out the window when the feminine power is truly integrated. And the heroine, along her journey, has gotten to the point where that's not the loudest voice in the room. The ego's voice is not the loudest voice in the room. I may consider what people are going to think if I make this decision, but that is not going to drive how I make the decision. That might be one minor aspect that I consider that comes like later. First thing I'm going to do is ask myself, what would I feel most free doing right now? How would things look differently if I was just in bliss? If I was just doing exactly what I loved to do and I didn't have to apologize for it or answer to anybody else's expectations, what would that look like? And that might be similar to what you're doing right now, but just with a few tweaks, or it might be radically different from how you're living your life right now. In either case, that's a pretty good indication of how much you're living through the ego in accordance to somebody else's rules, and how much and how big of a role your soul is playing in leading you to where you are right now. And so once you get to the point where you're no longer caring about the pressures of the outside world, and you're going to do what's right for you, and that's because you are certain that this is the way it needs to go in order for your highest, best self to be brought forward, that's the gift you're giving to the world. So why in God's name would you apologize for doing that? That is how you birth the best version of yourself and simultaneously call the people around you to stand up in their full truth and authenticity to be the best version of themselves also. And that right there is a major component of the heroine's journey that is not considered in the hero's journey. It is how she, with an open heart, not only transforms herself and steps into her full power and embraces her full, most authentic self and expresses that through every action that she makes, but she gets simultaneously and unconsciously is communicating to her allies that they now have permission to do the same thing. And so by the end of that journey, think of the Wizard of Oz, by the end of that journey, everybody steps into their full power. And ironically enough, their full power is the number one thing that they thought they lacked most. Come to find out, that's been their biggest gift. The thing that they thought they didn't have and were so distraught by the fact that their belief system said that they didn't have it, whether it's a heart or a brain or whatever, turns out that's their biggest strength. And they come to find that out by the end of the journey, thanks to the heroine being willing to answer the call, take a step forward on the adventure, say yes when she meets the initiation threshold, consciously sacrifice herself through the descent into her own underworld and befriend her suffering, trusting that if she goes through that process, it will free her, and then rising to the top by the end. Returning back to the same place that she started as a changed person with newfound wisdom to share with the collective. So it is about the journey. It is not about the destination. Which is so funny to say that out loud, because I remember a podcast episode I did on my old podcast. And I remember I gave a speech and I said it was a 5K race. And I was given a speech at the 5K race. So I gave a little metaphor, you know, give a little punchline at the end of the speech. And I said something like, I'll meet you at the, you guys can do it, whatever. Like, I'll meet you at the finish line. And I remember I'm not going to go into it. But these people that had a podcast that I just sniffed out from the beginning as just shysters, you know what I mean? Like, just really, like, no integrity at all. And I called that out like in the beginning. And I remember I was just kind of really skeptical of this little crew in the addiction recovery treatment space. And I remember I had voiced that to somebody that I was working with at the time. And they were like, that person has like really accomplished a lot. Like, look at the model they've created at their treatment center. Like, look how much they've accomplished in their life. Like, you know, they're pretty, you know, like on the ball or like whatever. Like, basically saying that like I was wrong and like, you know, these people should be, like, totally respected for, like, the work that they've put in. I'm saying to myself, all right, dude, you're getting sold the dream right here, because I'm sniffing out something that smells a little fishy over here, all right? And I'm not buying it. But whatever. If you want to live behind the illusion, that's great, but I can see through it. Come to find out, like, a few years later, I can't even begin to tell you the shit that ended up crumbling with this crew. One ended up getting arrested for trafficking huge amounts of fentanyl. And this was like the CEO of an addiction recovery center. One has like a slew of sexual assault charges against him for sexually assaulting female patients in his treatment center. Stealing money, this and that. I mean, just a huge, like in huge scandals too. Like hitting the news, and then anybody coming out speaking out against them have gotten slapped with lawsuits and libel and slander and all the shit. So I'm not mentioning any names here because don't come knocking on my door, because this is America. As far as I last checked, even though it's been in question for the recent years, freedom of speech still exists. So I'm going to say what I want to say. I'm not going to name any names, but the facts are the facts. So, and these people, so my point is slimy, right? Real sleazy people. And they do this podcast. And I just had noticed, like, at this time, every time I would put out a podcast episode on, like, some random topic that, like, nobody else was talking about in the podcast space, I would, like, spy on their podcast a little bit. And then they would do a podcast on the exact same topic. And it'd be like, like, how is this happening? So I started feeling like, are these people, like, paying attention to my show and, like, watching what I'm putting out? And I would say 100% yes, because as soon as I did that 5K speech, which was at an addiction 5K event, which they definitely were either there or heard about it or saw it or whatever, they, like, jump on and do this podcast. And they're like, yeah, so I heard somebody say the other day that, like, recovery, like, I'll meet you at the finish line. And it's like, recovery is not about the destination. It's about the process or the journey or whatever the frig it said. And I was just like, you know, like, it pissed me off. But here I am saying exactly what they said. And I agree. It is not the destination. The destination is actually irrelevant. Now, at the time, of course, I gave the speech. It was a little pun. You know what I mean? Finish line, 5K race. It's like, okay, yeah, I get it. I didn't actually mean it that literally, but I totally agree with the criticism that I got, that it's like, it's not about the destination. It is about the journey. And if I wasn't able to say that now, I'd be just as phony as they are. You know what I mean? Like, I'm willing to say, like, you know what? I actually agree 100% with what they said, and I'm willing to kind of at least agree with the criticism that I got at that time for the speech that I gave. It is entirely about the journey. It has absolutely nothing to do with the destination. To me, the destination is death. That's a destination of the physical reality. So when I hold that death moment for me in my conscious awareness as I do what I do every day, and I allow that to lead the decisions that I make, and what I am ambitious to accomplish in this lifetime, it is very much so the destination that informs the process and the journey for me. Because I know that when I get to the end, I want to be able to say, I did that. I did that. I crushed that. I freaking did that. And I did it to the best of my ability. And I did it in a way that served me in my highest good, which in turn benefited the people around me. I didn't do it for somebody else. I didn't live somebody else's life. I lived my life, and I did it the way I wanted to, and I did it the way I knew at my core, even below my conscious awareness, deep into my unconscious, that this is the way that it had to go. There was an inner knowing that led me along the way, and I listened. So when I get to the end, there's no room for regrets. Absolutely not. Because guess what? I'm not coming back here to do it again. And I know that this is my last lifetime. I know that at my core. So I'm here to, I've been here many times. I'm ready to sign off. When the last day comes here, this is it. We're not coming back to Earth. We're not doing this again. I'm going to hand over the baton. You guys handle the rest. I've been doing this too long. I'm tired. I really want to retire from the Earth School. I am for real. I am done. I'm really done. Okay? So what do I got to do? If I'm going to be here, I got one more lifetime to live. It's this one. Let's go out with a bang. You know what I mean? Let's shore this shit up. Let's tie up all the loose ends. Let's close the boxes. Let's shut the doors. And let's make sure the rooms are full. And let's leave it as a gift for all of the next lives that are coming next. And they can pick up where I left off. But my soul is going to go off and do some other things now. We get some other shit to do. You know what I mean? We can't be tied down here with all this density. We're ready to do something else. So now I know that just because of the work that I've done. The work with past life regression work, with activating my cosmic DNA work that I do, Akashic Records work, stuff. I know this is the last one. Which you would think adds a lot of pressure of like, oh my God, is this my last lifetime? If it is, I gotta get all this done before I leave. But for some reason, it's actually a huge relief to know that I've actually been here for so long, doing this so many times over, that I'm actually concluding the journey. of the earth school. So now my soul can go off and go into other realms and do some other things. It's like, hell yeah. That's what I'm talking about. You know what I mean? Karma. It's a wrap. Karma is a wrap, bitch. We're freaking done with this one. You can take your karma. You can sign, seal, and deliver it to somebody else because we're not taking any more on. That's why I don't have kids. Okay? Sorry, hate to break it to all your parents out there, but your kids are your karma. That's why so many of the young people are choosing to not have kids. There's a part of them that knows, whether it's conscious or unconscious, that they do not want to incur any more karma and weigh themselves down into the cycle of reincarnation. Like, that is actually, like, for real, for real. So, I chose not to engage and bring on that level of karma. I'm very happy with the decision that I made. And that's what it is. I think marriage also is probably your karma too. 100% fact. So won't be doing that either. You know what I'm saying? Trying to keep this one light. Because I've been a mother in many previous lifetimes. And I've certainly been a wife and a husband. Okay? So we're good. We're good. We aced that. We're done. That school's a wrap. We graduated from that class. We good. Okay? Ain't got to do that no more. Don't need to go down that karmic hole. I want to be free. I want to be light by the time this one's over. So we got to keep it simple. We got to keep it, I always say, you got to keep it focused. You got to stay focused. You got to stay focused on the path at hand, in the tasks in front of you. What's calling your soul? What are you supposed to be doing here? What are you good at? What do people say you're good at? What do you do that you find easy that other people find hard? What are the things that you do that people are frankly a little jealous of? Because you do it so well. These are the questions you have to ask yourself in order to find out what the heck you're supposed to be doing here. Trying to find your soul's purpose. Start with those few questions. And allow life to guide you where you're going. Say, come from a place of yes. Take on experiences and opportunities. Because it's just, if not more important, to know what you shouldn't be doing here as to know what you should be doing here. The only way that I've been able to find out exactly what I'm supposed to be doing on this planet is because of how many things I did that I knew for certain I wasn't supposed to be doing. So you have to be the researcher of your own experiment of life. You have to go out there. You got to try things. You got to work here. You got to work there. You got to try this. You got to try that. And if you're burning yourself out and you're losing all of your energy, you got to exit stage left and make a pivot. Because when you find your passion and you're living out your soul's purpose, you do not age, you do not tire, and you do not get physically ill. And it might take some time to get to that place. You might have to do a bunch of other things first. You might have to get married and divorced and married and divorced and married and divorced. And then finally you get it. You might have to have a few kids. They're going to have to drive you crazy, you know? Or maybe they'll be great and they don't bring you a whole lot of karma. But they might raise living hell in your life and then you got to pay off all this karmic debt. And that's good. You want to pay off the karmic debt. Pay that debt down. Pay it all the way down. Because once you do get it to a certain point, then all of a sudden there's this space. Now I did that. Now I have some room and some time to explore the second half of my life. And so once you get all that other shit out of the way, frankly, sorry, but it just is. It's a bunch of doo-doo. It's a bunch of caca. It's a bunch of fucking, I don't even know what. But it's the same. Now, I didn't do it through kids and marriage. I mean, I did it through several entirely dysfunctional relationships that we've closed the chapter on permanently. But I also did it in like jobs that I hated. I was good for 2 years. 2 years at each job. Even my mother would say, like, oh, we're getting up on the 2 year mark. I'm going to start hearing. The conversations are going to start taking shape of, I got to get the hell out of here. And it was like clockwork. The only places that I lasted more than 2 years was when I shifted from full-time or part-time to per diem. and then I do per diem. So it like looks good on your resume that you didn't leave everywhere after 2 years. You stuck around for a few more years, but like you were not part of the system anymore. You were per diem and like did not participate really like at all. So that's the only time I ever stayed any place longer than 2 years. 2 years is my limit. I am like on to the next thing. I do not do stagnation. And for me, the 2 year mark, that's when I start to find the stagnant. That's the stagnation window. If I keep going by staying here, we're moving into stagnation. So I'm not going to do that. I'm gonna head out. So yeah, you gotta do, that's the part of the heroine's journey. You gotta go into the shit. You cannot avoid it. And you cannot rush this stuff. This is all in divine timing. I hate to break it to you, but your soul knows so much more than you. You don't know anything. You know nothing. And so just embrace it. It makes life so much easier when you're like, I don't even know what I'm doing. Like, okay, great. Now listen to like some intuition that pops up that's like, maybe I should try this. Don't have any expectations. Don't think that like that's going to be the rest of your life. You got to look at it like practice. I got to get out here and like get my feet wet. I got to try this, got to try that, got to try this. Maybe I'll do that. Maybe I don't like it. I'll leave. Maybe I'll leave. And then I'll realize I actually really did like it because I kind of went around the journey and came back and landed back at the starting point. It's like me. I did not intend on being a therapist. I fell into it. And once I got there, I was like, oh no. Oh no, we're not doing this. We're not doing this for the rest of our life. This is like burnout city. I can't sustain this shit. I mean, talk about the systems, back to the systems thing. I mean, oh my God. Some of these platforms, and I'm just going to say the name because I'm off of it now. BetterHelp. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? $30 an hour? You can pay a therapist $30 an hour? And then require them to check in with the clients like every 3 days? Send messages, do notes, just like do all this crazy stuff. But you're going to pay them $30 an hour. You know, they paid like $150,000 for that degree, right? Or like me, double that because I'm addicted to freaking learning. I mean, really, $30 an hour? Are we serious, people? And we wonder why the mental health space is a total train wreck? I mean, it's one thing if you're going to, I guess, pay somebody $30 an hour and then ask nothing of them. I mean, that's all right. But you're going to pay someone $30 an hour and then require them to do all this work? I mean, are you freaking deranged? And like, if you have to pay the therapist that rate because you don't charge the clients enough for the therapy, then sorry, you're going to have to charge people a little bit more. I mean, that's a formula that just doesn't add up. So high turnover rate on that platform. I did it. That's the experiment that I was talking about in the last episode. Just needed to gather some data. So I did it. Yeah. 2 years. How about 2 months? And I was on my way out. Okay. No, not going to work. Not going to work. So you got to ask yourself, like, once I figure out what my path is and what I'm here to do, you got to really stay true to what value are you placing on yourself? Because if you don't value yourself, no one else is going to value you. You got to command respect by just being centered, being in who you are, and just making no apologies for it. Hey, this is what I'm worth. Take it or leave it. So it is what it is. Like, this is the arc of the heroine's journey. You're going to piss some people off when you start valuing yourself because you're not going to play that game. You're not going to play anybody else's game. You're only going to play your own. And you're going to move to the beat of your own drum. And trust me, you're not going to regret it. So, that's what I have to say about that. But yeah, the system stuff in this world is absolutely absurd. And we wonder why mental health is in such a tragic space. And why so many people get bad therapists. It's like, they're not bad therapists. Like, there aren't really bad. I mean, I guess there are some bad therapists. But I mean, most people come into the space because there is like a calling from within to do it. Because who's going to voluntarily sit to listen to people's problems all day, right? Like, you got to be a special kind of person to gravitate towards that and actually find fulfillment in that. Most people aren't doing that. And so you come into the space because there is some inner knowing, and then you get lost in the sauce because you're part of a system that doesn't respect you, doesn't honor you, and doesn't honor healing. And so you get overworked, underpaid, and burnt out. And that's when you get bad therapists. Chances are when they started in the space, they were real eager, you know? They really wanted to help people. They weren't really sure exactly how to do it because they weren't looking at themselves. They were just focused on, I want to be here to help other people. Well, no, that means you're here to help yourself because it goes both ways. Every client is a reflection of you. And if you don't leave that session every day asking yourself, what came up in me? What was activated in me that drew in this particular client to talk about these particular things today? You're not doing the deeper work and you're not getting the real truth and essence of what your gift actually is. So they come into this field, they want to help people. They might not exactly know how to do it because they're not doing the deep self-reflection at first. Eventually they might get there, but if they get lost in the sauce in the process, forget about it. Forget about it. So that's why I'm really honing my practice now. I'm working like any new clients that I take on, I'm only working exclusively with healers in the healing space, therapists, psychologists, even yoga teachers, spiritual teachers. Because those are the people that need the most support. They need more support than the clients who are just seeking out the therapy. That is a fact. I am certain of that. And if we aren't protecting and nurturing our healers, we're all screwed. So that's what I get to say about that. And we don't live in a world with systems that protect our healers and nurture our healers and support their growth and allow them space to blossom. It's just not the way it is. And maybe you can call it whatever you want. Corporate America, capitalism, the patriarchy, whatever it is. I don't really care what you call it. But that's what it is. That's what it's doing. So call it whatever you want. But it's not working. We'll just say it like that. So, yeah, that's where I'm at with it. So that's it, you guys. I'm going to leave it there. I might come back and do another episode on the hero or something. I don't know. I think I'm going on a podcast, The Quest for Well-Being. I'm going to be a guest on that podcast in a few weeks. So when we do that, I will let you know and I'll include a link so you guys can listen. I think it makes sense to either do the heroine's journey or, I don't know, probably Chiron. Heart-centered healing with Chiron, something like that. All right, you guys, it's been real. Stay grounded. Stay true to yourself. Don't take any shit, okay? That's my advice to you. I will catch you guys on the next episode. And as always, may the light always, always lead your way. Be well, everybody. The Third Realm Integration Podcast and related content is intended to provide information and/or entertainment only and is not a substitute for mental health or medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Do not delay mental health or medical consultation or substitute a mental health or medical professional's opinion because of what you heard on this show. Seek the advice of your physician or another qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a mental health or medical condition. The host of this podcast does not provide emergency support for mental health or medical issues. For questions or concerns, visit your local emergency room or contact your doctor. This is a quote from Maureen Murdoch's book called The Heroine's Journey Workbook. So this is the workbook, and I highly suggest everybody get it. The myth of female inferiority and dependency of the 50s and early 60s was traded for the myth of the superwoman of the 80s and 90s. These women who sought political, economic, and spiritual equality with men in academia, business, and home felt an initial rush from their daily successes, but eventually began to experience a weariness in their hearts. Burnout and divorce took a toll on their health, and the struggle for individual achievement lost its allure. With this shift, the definition of heroism demanded a change as well, from striving to satisfy the demands of the cacophony of outer voices to learning to balance personal, family, and professional lives and listen to the still voice within.